David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 321, our 2018 Halloween special. Marvel Noise is sponsored by nobody, but we're happily part of the Deliberate Noise Network that features other great shows such as DC Noise and Comic Book Noise and Noise Noise and all that good stuff. In the past, for Halloween, we sort of have had a tradition over the last 3 or 4 years of going through chronologically a deep dive into the Tomb of Dracula series, which I had only read a few issues of as a kid because I was 5 years old in 1975. So when these books were coming out, I was still more attracted to the capes and whatnot. And going back and fully reading these now has been quite entertaining on several different levels. Visually, and obviously some of the silly old Bronze Age stuff that looking at through older readers' eyes now, or experienced readers' eyes, I should say, puts new light on things. In episode 255 in 2015, Jerry McDade and I, who has joined me on this journey, covered the first 10 issues of Tomb of Dracula. In the very next episode, 256, we covered issues 11 through 21. The next year, in 2016, on episode 281, we covered issues 22 through 31. And in 2017, last year, on episode 305, we covered Tomb of Dracula, issues 32 to 42. But wait, now in 2018, there's no Jerry. He caught himself up between, literally, the holds of two separate haunted houses. The pull is equal between, and so I could picture him with his arms and legs outstretched, trying to resist the pull, seeing which way the tides are going to pull him. So, fortunately, though, I got my guys that I can count on here. We got Andrew and Kevin pinch-hitting for Jerry, and we are going to cover just a few issues of Tomb of Dracula, but ones that plant him firmly into the Marvel Universe. So thank you, Andrew and Kevin, for jumping in to get a little Halloween-y with me.
And I'm Dr. Sun.
I feel like we need to find the Montesi formula, Steve.
Someday. I like those issues a lot. Once we get done with Tomb of Dracula, I think it would be fun to really read the story that was his demise for good, or should have been. But to catch you guys up, as Kevin mentioned with Dr. Sun, Tomb of Dracula just finished a multi-issue epic that depicted the final confrontation between Dracula and the disembodied brain Dr. Sun, who's right up Kevin's alley. All of the supporting cast were present too, from Harker, Van Helsing, Drake, Harold Harold, the writer, and even Blade, the vampire killer. In fact, issue number 42 ends with a cliffhanger. Dr. Sun has been defeated, and Blade and Dracula stand poised for battle against each other. But that's not where issue 43 begins, where we pick up on this episode. The book, it needed the equivalent of a few issues after the big arc to breathe. I will let you breathe for a few issues longer, before they return to the exploits of the supporting Scooby gang. But no, that's not to be. We'll get to them before long. And it just makes these issues 43 and 4, a perfect batch for these Jerry-less issues. And you'll see why when we get to our crossover here. So issue 43, it hits the stands in the beginning of 1976, when I was a six-year-old, and bears a rare Marvel Bernie Wrightson cover, guys.
It looks like it says New Year's Nightmare, so this isn't a Halloween story. Maybe this is a New Year's story.
it did come out in January. Our cover date, March, but January 1976. So they got the timing right.
Also, seeing this makes me think that there's some Walt Simonson. I can see how he might have looked to this sort of thing. It feels like it's heading in that direction in a way. Not that obviously Wrightson is before him, but you know what I mean? I can see how maybe this would be like a Simonson-esque influence.
Yeah, it's a nice girl, but Dracula's proportions are like a little wonky there. It's not the best Wrightson.
Well, I mean, his arm is... The arm going forward is bent in a way that you can't see under the folds of the
His neck looks
his cloak.
Really long, though. Anyway.
But I like her hair. That kind of wispy, spinny hair like that reminds me of Simonson.
This issue 43 is that Give It Room to Breathe kind of standalone issue. And overall, it reads kind of like a Ben Urich focused issue of Daredevil. Because it's told from the point of view of a newspaper journalist, Paul Butterworth, who we see in his office, his fingers raining down on his Smith Corona like syrup onto fluffy panned bread. The credits even read, an eyewitness account by Paul Butterworth, as told to writer Marv Wolfman, Gene Colan, and Tom Palmer. Tom did both the inks and the colors. And John, not Art Vandelay, Costanza. Is the letters.
It looks like he's a two-finger typist too, Steve.
It does. He's probably sticking the tongue out of the side, you know, against the roof of his mouth while he types too. Well, Paul Butterworth here, he's worried that he's short on time, that he's going to be traced back to this newsroom, but he's got to get his story out. And the next 11 pages are flashbacks that bring us back to this present. Butterworth is reporting on a crime scene in Boston. It's the third girl to be recently found with her blood completely drained. We then see a fourth girl killed by Dracula in a graveyard. And Wolfman's great. He throws in a little history of kind of what she's there for, her, you know, her fears, her hopes, her dreams, her sorrow, that kind of thing. And then, you know, Dracula dives on her in a grave. And Butterworth, instead of going home, getting a good night's sleep, and waking up to a stack of the missus's amazing pancakes, serendipitously hears a commercial for a magazine featuring an eyewitness encounter with Dracula by Harold Harold.
It's a great name.
It really is. And the face matches the name, you know? So Mr. Butterworth...
And he spills the coffee all over. He just seemed like a caricature. I don't know if you guys have ever seen "Twas the Night Before Christmas," the cartoon.
Oh, sure.
But he reminds me a lot of the little family in that.
Butterworth looks him up, and Harold conveys to him what happened after the events of issue 42. He's more than happy to tell his story. Oh, I've never been interviewed before. He's so happy, and like you said, spilling the coffee and everything. And Butterworth knows he's got this little guy right where he wants him by the smile that Colan puts on him. But so we get Harold Harold's version of what happens at the end of issue 42. It's a flashback within a flashback. And so with the regular flashback, you get curved corners on your panels. But on the flashback within the flashback, you get curved corners and like wavy, you know, boundary lines of the panels to differentiate it even further, which is fun. Dracula threw Blade around after they were facing off against each other until Harold joined in and jumped on Dracula's back and Dracula had to run off. All right. So Butterworth doesn't believe a word of it, but he's on his way home, you know, to those pancakes. And he answers a police scanner call and he witnesses Dracula himself throwing around some police officers. Dracula then turns his attention to Butterworth, but he gets foiled by his crucifix.
Because Butterworth seems like a very religious man. Right?
He does.
A real Sunday churchgoer.
You know, I could see him as someone who completely puts nothing into his faith, but like still wears the crucifix, though. You know, he's almost a poser in every way.
Well, he mentioned earlier that he had seen Morbius. And I know his title, he was appearing in Adventure into Fear, which ended in 1975, December.
Right.
So I was, but there was no footnote or anything. So I was just wondering, was that some mysterious link we were supposed to track? I was so hoping that they would have a, you know, look at Adventure into Fear number 19 or something, and there'd be a panel where he's in the back corner or something like that.
That'd be cool. So next, Butterworth visits the Scoobies. It's Harker, Drake, Van Helsing, and Blade. He got their address from Harold Harold. Again, Harold Harold was happy to divulge as much information as Butterworth wanted. And Blade confirms the confrontation with Dracula, but describes the events quite differently than Harold did. Blade basically drove Dracula backwards, and he kind of stumbles over Harold Harold, and Van Helsing shoots him with a quiver, and then he flees. Butterworth, he's still not convinced, though. But just then, Dracula comes bursting through the door.
Whoa, you don't invite that guy inside.
That's what I'm saying. Doesn't he have to be invited? Or is it just because... I mean, this is supposed to be a hotel, but it's not the same place that he fought Harker in the past. I don't know. Anyway. But it's funny because they're saying goodnight to Mr. Butterworth, and Dracula bursts in, goodnight? No, there'll be no goodnights tonight. And Dracula, he's all over them, you guys. He's like, Van Helsing drops her quiver, Blade's stake is crushed in Dracula's hand, Harker gets swatted from his usually, like, formidable wheelchair that has all the weapons in it and stuff, and Butterworth, he's got the crucifix, but Dracula uses that mesmerizing stare and gets him to remove it. Oh, and then he tosses Drake out the window.
Yeah, that seemed particularly harsh. I was worried for him for a half second.
But it's like,
you can always hang from a tree. It's cool.
Thank goodness. But Dracula, like, is he, you know, did he not take his lithium or something? Because his enemies are here, ripe for destruction, and Dracula is satisfied with making a threat to Butterworth that he's going to come back and get him at some point, and just splits, even though he's got everyone, you know, defeated, basically.
Isn't that what Blade does in the movies, too? He's like, I'll be back for you later.
Or maybe it's that whole thing, like, I told you I'd allow you to breathe for a few issues before the next thing. And so that flashback brings us back to the opening scene with Butterworth putting his story to paper. He's a full believer now. You know, he's seen Dracula twice in person. He snapped pictures of him, even. And then he hears it. He hears the door forced open. And it's Dracula. He shoots a silver bullet. Dracula just turns to mist. No problem. He waves a cross at Dracula, but it's not a crucifix, so it you know, it stings, but it's Dracula can tolerate it. He pushes a desk at Dracula. It's like, come on now, right? Dracula throws him through a glass wall, which actually turns out to be fortunate because it gives Butterworth some distance, like a head start, to start running from him.
Butterworth... Well, don't forget, Dracula also monologues about how terrible America is.
it seems like that's always his deal.
He's not happy in Boston. He's finding all these nice girls.
I think he might have
nice
done too much monologuing, though, because I guess that's how you defeat Dracula. You get him to talk a lot, and then the sun comes up, and he's like, ah, can't kill you yet.
Well, that's just it. Butterworth runs all the way to a window facing east, and it's been such a long night that the sun's coming up and Dracula's got a split.
The Bilbo Baggins faint, as we like to call it.
Yeah. And Butterworth, time for the pancakes, right? Actually, he gets relegated to like a self-help column because his pictures, Dracula can't be photographed, so they're all just blank. Which,
did you hear a little wah-wah in your head when he said that?
Yeah, exactly, because his editor's, like, happy to tell him. What? Butterworth? Get out of here! Issue number 44 has a Gene Colan cover that is so gaudy, and it's like, it's got Strange riding a steed that has these, like, circular rune... like patterns all over it, right? Almost like Venom right now with the alien thing, like the swirls and stuff.
Are you sure they're not fighting, like, on the Rainbow Bridge or something?
Well, that's just it. He's shooting an energy blast that's, like, radiating manga-like blast marks all over the place that then are the foreground over this background that has all these vectors that match the energy beams, like, force rays, and it's just so... And that doesn't even begin to... Like, the problem with the perspective of the fact that Dracula is standing in the foreground and Strange is riding up behind him, yet he's shooting him in the chest.
Do you like... He only has three fingers, it looks like.
It's like an M.C. Escher thing. But it's a hot mess, you guys. But the cover tease, Someone Will Die. It's Doctor Strange crossing over with Dracula. That's why I needed you guys on this.
Well, you know I'm a Doctor Strange guy.
Yeah.
I thought it was the astral plane, Steve. That's why the physics are all not working.
Sure, that must be it. M.C. Escher land. Well, the issue opens with Doctor Strange examining a mystical orb, looking for Wong, his faithful manservant.
Who's dead?
It's the problem. And,
Doctor Strange looks really haggard in this one. They are making him well, look like he's been through the wars.
Well, you give him that's what happens when he's got a day without Wong, manservanting him. You know? He's like, oh, I'm unshaven. I haven't eaten in a day. Where the hell is Wong? My laundry. And he finds him in an alleyway near death with vampire marks. You know, the telltale sign right on his neck. And Doc uses the Eye of Agamotto to first, like, pull Wong out of the alleyway through the orb and then suspends him, like, kind of, like, holding him in a near-death state in another dimension until he can kind of learn more about how to save him. And so Doc takes on his astral form. And he enters Wong's mind and relives Wong's last memories. Wong intercepts a Dracula feasting on a babe in an alleyway. And Dracula turns and sees him, and he turns his sulfuric breath on Wong.
And I'm glad that Dracula has fangs, because I didn't realize both of them have, like, red collars and blue outfits and dark hair.
It's hard throughout this whole thing. It really is.
Yeah.
And there's a thing where they go onto the dreamscape and they're sort of in different costumes, but it's still the same. So it's even closer to looking the same. It's like, wow. There's also some brief interludes that, for long-time listeners, readers of the series, depict Harold being exasperated that his, like, sort of editor, Aurora, has written her own vampire piece and has sold it and no longer seems interested in him. And then we also get an old gray-bearded vampire who's spying Dracula settling into Dr. Sun's suburban mansion.
It's not Merlin.
It looks like Merlin.
I thought it was Gandalf.
Dr. Strange, he travels to the alleyway where Wong was attacked. And he's able to detect the undead Dracula's life patterns. And he's able to trace those life patterns back to Dr. Sun's lair.
Yeah, I like all the references to Dr. Sun and how Drax is like, damn equipment, computers. He's not a fan of stuff.
Well, he wants
America,
to...
technology, etc.
I think he wants to keep beating on Dr. Sun, too, but there's no Dr. Sun left. So it's like, I have to get out of this machine.
If only this brain was still floating around.
I like that there was this nice little panel of Dr. Strange with his cloak spread kind of on the rooftop that mimics an earlier panel of Dracula kind of coming into the same location, portrayed similarly, although it's not the exact same piece of roof that they're standing on, but it just had that same, again, with that red and blue, here they come, you know, and now Strange is coming. But the sleeping Dracula smells Doc a-coming. And a come in he does. He bursts in like Dracula at Harker's place.
And I like that they make it clear that Strange can't just destroy him because he needs him around to save Wong.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, I got to think the Sorcerer Supreme would just have some sort of spell or formula, perhaps, that could take care of Dracula.
Dracula's pretty good at adapting to Strange's attacks, though. I mean, he's heard of Strange in whispers floating through gypsy camps. And Drac's ability to turn to mist is even too much for the binding forces of the Rings of Ragador, coupled with the unbreakable crimson bands of Sidorak. You can't bind what it ain't there.
So basically all those characters, Will-O-Wisp and everything, mm-hmm. Doctor Strange is just right out of luck with them.
Well, just like Drac had to take out his aggression on Doctor Sun on Doctor Sun's machines, Strange takes out his frustrations. He settles on destroying Dracula's coffin, because vampires hate that, you know? And then he uses the images of Icon to wreak havoc in Dracula's mind, forcing him to suffer through whatever fears a vampire lord would fear. So here's where we get the scene change. It, like, changes back to, like, feudal times when Prince Vlad Dracula was a soldier of Transylvania, protecting his land from Lord Turak and his invading Turkish army. And here's those kooky camouflaged horses again. I mean, it's a cool design and all, don't get me wrong, but it's like, it's kooky.
Well, also, we're still in the gray era of, like, no background, so it's the weird colored backgrounds and horses and Doctor Strange with a lance and he's got a regular sword. And yeah, I'm taking the guy with the lance. That distance, you can't be beat, Steve. He's going to get him, stab him before he can even reach his sword.
Yeah, Strange is Turak, and their dress is different, so they, you know, but they're still trying to maintain that red and blue, so it is kind of hard to see what is what. But the joust, you can't beat the joust. So Strange jousts Dracula dead, which I guess is reliving the moment of his actual death by Lord Turak on horseback. The memory then suggests that Turak then brought his lifeless body to a witch woman, Leanda, to revive him with the vampire's curse. Not sure why he would do that other than to just curse him, but...
He likes a challenge, Steve.
Something tells
it's
me
too it easy to kill him with a lance.
Something tells me it doesn't end up turning out good for Lord Turak and his family, though, if we ever revisit this history. But Dracula, he's freaking out. He's like, I don't want to be unliving mommy, you know, or just short of mommy. Dracula then comes out of the trance, where Strange reveals that he needs to break Dracula so that he'll help him revive his servant Wong. And Dracula, he is so insulted by that, to be put through all of this for taking the life of a mere lackey hireling. He fights off Strange's influence, mesmerizes him with his hypnotic state, and feasts upon the Sorcerer Supreme. Boom!
So it's new status quo, right? Like, Dracula becomes Sorcerer Supreme?
I like the line, though, farewell until we meet again, 3 days hence. So he is gonna raise him and control him.
That's a lot of power.
Told you someone would die, right?
Yep.
But don't worry, loyal reader, because to be continued in just 1 week in Doctor Strange number 14. Still only 25 cents. Doctor Strange 14, written by Steve Englehart, but the rest of the team is the same, with Tomb of Dracula writer Marv Wolfman, the editor of this book. So it's visually, in almost every way, it might as well be an issue of Tomb of Dracula, you know? Although you get those little Englehart bits here and there that you know it's Englehart, where he's almost poking fun at some of the events that happen, the way that Strange is, you know, how the style of the time was for the dialogue to describe exactly what you're also seeing on panel, and some of the stuff plot-wise, I'm guessing, having read up some on how Englehart behaved, and having read a lot of Englehart stuff, that he's poking fun at some of Wolfman's plot points by calling attention to their silliness, or after doing something amazing that it's like, Strange shouldn't be able to do that. He's like, right afterwards saying, ah, that took so much out of me, I'll never be able to do that again. You know? Like, so don't be expecting it, folks. That kind of thing.
big shout out to Colin and Palmer, though. That's a lot of pages to be putting out.
Yep. They were the teams of both books. Yeah. And Palmer was inking and coloring both titles, which is cool. So the splash page of Doctor Strange 14 has Dracula holding Strange Cyclops Phoenix style, you know, so Doc's head is hanging upside down. What I love about this panel, though, is it shows gravity's force on his mustache, and it makes it look like their little, like, Dastardly Dan handlebar mustache. I love that. I think of Doctor Strange's mustache is being attached all the way, that if he's upside down, it's not going to, like, point towards the floor.
Well, I also like that his costume is very restrictive, so his arms don't go all the way back. They actually kind of hover, like, so you know he must not really have full range of motion. We need to redesign his outfit, Steve. Give him a better superhero outfit.
Give him a tunic, like in the movies, right?
Or a turtleneck.
So Dracula, oh God. So Dracula is, oh man. I just got to stop and purge that image from my head for a minute. Goodbye, Horton. Go hear a who. All right, Dracula, he's got the dead Doctor Strange in his arms, and he just throws him down into Doctor Sun's, like, dark cellar. I mean, he just chucks him down there.
Won't the cloak, like, break the fall and help levitate? I saw the movie, Steve. The cloak's alive.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I hope that's happening in the gutters between the panels for Strange's sake, because this alone could be like, what was the cause of death? The vampire bite or the neck break? But just as Dracula exits, I'll see you in 3 days, an ethereal Strange in his astral form appears. He fled his physical form when he felt Dracula's hypnotic stare starting to take over. But the problem is, and I found this to be quite clever, Doc can't re-enter his physical body. Because Dracula's enchantment over his victims' bodies after he's killed them makes it almost foreign to Strange's touch. It's unwilling to receive any stimuli except for from Dracula. So Strange is locked out. And here we see Strange get all mad. I mean, he really flies off the handle here. He's like, oh, woe is me. Why is it my life got to be like this and all that business? And kind of talks himself off the ledge and starts focusing and working on his gamble of a plan here.
Well, I know you like this run. We might have to do it, Steve, because this, I don't want to get too off topic, but the continuity of Strange's storyline was particularly interesting if you looked at the issues right before this, where he had to meet Eternity and the whole world got recreated and everything. I mean, this is like a...
Yep.
It really is like a continuation, too, because they drop most of that right before, the issue before and the issue after. It's all back to that.
But yep.
This is a little sidestep, but it's pretty trippy stuff. Maybe we'll come back to it someday.
Dracula takes another victim and is met by a taunting vision of Dr. Sun.
Well, the ghost of Dr. Sun, Steve.
But the ghost of Dr. Sun is just the ghost of Dr. Sun's brain. You don't get to see he hasn't, you know, become whole again in the afterlife. And Drac is disturbed by this. He goes and checks on Dr. Strange. Nope, he's still dead in the cellar. 2 days later, constantly checking on Strange. Is he still there? Yep. 2 days later, Drac again gets haunted, this time by an apparition of his dead wife.
Well, he also goes to look for Wong, and Wong is missing.
This is what is going on, right? He's going to find out. He's going to not let this apparition just disappear on him. He's going to chase this thing down. So he chases her further and further east. Here we go again. It's just like last issue. Further and further east until the apparition fades away and Dracula is like out over the ocean faced with the rising sun. Ah, oh, it's like, somebody get this guy a compass.
That is one fast bat, though, to outfly the Don.
Oh, man. Just think he's got to be so... Now he's, like, beaten down mentally, emotionally, and physically, you know? He's like Wile E. Coyote after he climbs back up from the canyon after taking a bad fall and an Acme, you know, anvil lands on his head, too. He's fuming now. He returns to Strange's body on the third night, and he's like, forget this whole control thing. He's got a stake in his hand. He's just going to take out Strange as soon as he starts to become animated, you know?
He starts losing his head over it.
It's true. But the moment Strange's now vampiric body begins to rise, I mean, it's really unclear how it happens here, but it seems like Strange's astral form re-enters it and lifts it out of Dracula's way and then fights back with all the fury of a vampire named Stephen Strange.
It seems like a lot of stuff becomes really vague for the rest of this story.
And Doc is no match for Dracula, again. And Dracula is so on top of this physical altercation that he's taunting Strange. I mean, you're a vampire. I'm the lord of the vampires. I'm your master. I'm your lord. And a light bulb goes off in Strange's head. Doc thinks that's it. He's called upon Oshter. He's called upon Agamotto. He's called upon the Vashanti. But of all the many godlike beings, that's not the one he needs today. So he calls upon the power of the Tetragrammaton, Jehovah. And the great unmanifest hears his plea, and Dracula burns.
Well, I thought you were supposed to keep Dracula alive so he can help Wong and everything.
The plan's changed.
Dr. Strange has the cutest little fangs, too.
They are. They're darling. They're just little baby fangs. But, I mean, Dracula really burns. I mean, he burns like to a charred corpse. Dracula then calls Wong forth from his holding dimension and simply, as it's described here, abjures him of the curse. And then he abjures himself of the curse. And he's fine. Like, he's back not being a vampire anymore and stuff.
Man, Jubilee should have went to see him.
It's like an unbelievable deus ex machina here. And Wong all wakes up like, what's going on? And Doc's like, nothing. What makes you say that? Kind of, you know, all that business. But thank God, Dracula will menace man no more. Dracula, who's, you know.
But I had to check the next issue because I'm like, well, Dracula can't be dead. I got to go see what happened.
I did the same thing, Kevin.
Well, the rest of you guys are going to have to wait until next year. Because I might have to get Jerry to do two segments next year just so we get a nice big piece of his time to make up for this time around. But, yeah, that's this, you know, this series went on till issue 74, I believe, or 75. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes from here.
This 14 was not maybe a highlight issue. That ending is really...
Well, and that's where we get the Engelhart.
Satisfying.
That's where we get the Engelhart thing, where he's like, that took so much out of me, I'd never be able to do that again. I'd never be able to use those powers again. I'm burnt out. I'm burnt out on this whole thing, on this whole crossover thing with Dracula. Somebody call the Silver Surfer next time.
But I like the Tomb of Dracula stuff. That part was good.
Isn't it fun? The supporting cast is good. The... you know, colon landscapes and the buildings and the alleys and the graveyards and all that stuff is fun. The way that it's still the Mighty Marvel Manor, yet Dracula, every issue or so, has to kind of run off and eat a babe, you know? That's pretty... It's silly, fun 70s Bronze Age Marvel comics. Just the way you like them, true believer.
Harold H. Harold.
There'll be more from Harold H. Harold. All right, so that's our Halloween special Blitz episode. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Kevin. Jerry, we'll get you back next year, but thank you for all the time you've put into this series up until this point. Next episode will be out in just a few days after Halloween. That's right. We'll get it out nice and quick for you, because it's all in the can. We've got many con men reports. We've got some recent reads. So look for that in a few days. And let's see, how about Until Strange's Fangs Grow Back, full size, make mine Marvel. Later.
Wait, did they ever do that What If?
They missed this batch. Maybe this will bring it back to people's attention.
What if Doctor Strange was Lord of the Vampires?
Yeah.
I was actually writing down a bunch of what ifs. I'm like, what ifs could you do? Because I was still vexed by it from previously when we discussed it.
What if Strange and Wong were killed by Dracula? And were just taken off the board right after rebuilding the universe.
Yeah, and then you'd have like a new... Then they'd put... Probably Cleo would be the Sorcerer Supreme.
No, they'd bring back the aged Genghis.
What if MODOK married MODAM? They did that one, right, Steve?
No, they should, though.
Power Records presents Man-Thing in Night of the Laughing Dead. A swamp, a bubbling bed of life of which you are a part. Once you were a man, a chemist named Ted Salas, but the serum that was to have made you a super soldier combined with strange forces in the swamp to make you over into the Man-Thing. But your former existence seems a far-off dream to you, doesn't it? Less than a dream, in fact. No longer able to reason, you now function on emotion, those few which you still feel. You can feel what others feel. You can understand those feelings. But emotions are often as ambiguous as words, and sometimes they are even more so. Consider this weeping clown, for example. What does he feel now as he raises a gun to his temple, as the tears roll down his grease-painted cheeks? You may never know, for across the marshland comes a single, devastatingly final shot. That prods you into action. You attempt to hurry to the source of the evil sound. But no matter, you are too late. It was too late before you began. And all you can do is stare through hazy, crimson eyes at the little clown's corpse and reflect on the buried fragments of memories brought to the surface by the ugly sight. You remember how the man you were fought to protect his scientific discovery. You remember more, the blinding moments of escape, the knowledge that he had to destroy the vial, and perhaps, at the same time, destroy himself. And so, Ted Salas did what had to be done. Memory. You recall the transformation, the mingling of the chemical with the swamp waters around him, the stark shock to his metabolism, and the bitter ending of his sanity. Slowly, mercifully, the memories end. And the man who was once Ted Salas, whose body has become that of a swamp-roaming creature, forgets again what once he knew. It's better that way. It's better. As those thoughts fade, your gaze falls upon something at the dead man's foot. But you wonder, could these little scrawls on this thin white leaf explain why the man took his own life? But wait, another flash of recollection from your former life. Funeral. Humans bury their dead, so this one must be laid to rest. And so you take the body deep into the marsh, while events take shape miles away that will transform this already somber evening into something more terrifying by far.
The only rooms left are my deluxe.
Come on, Richard, we'll find another...
Lady, not tonight. I'm exhausted.
I'll just bet. That'll be $22.40, including tax.
These two young people are Richard Rory and Ruth Hart. Two old friends of yours, Man-Thing.
Well, that was a hassle, wasn't it?
I'll say. I'll bet he's a reform school reject. But you know, I haven't got the energy to argue with him. Not now.
Maybe we can go to the carnival tomorrow.
Carnival?
Sure. See the trucks over there? They must be playing a town around here.
Boss, Mr. Garvey, Daryl's gone. Run away. We've got to go after him. We can't lose the show's only clown. And besides, he was terribly upset tonight. I'm afraid of what he might do. Please, Mr. Garvey, if he does something rash, you'll be... Oh!
I'll be the boss of this three-ring loney farm, just like before, you hear? And if you don't like it, you can scram.
Holy cow, Ruth, did you see that?
Richard, wait. You don't know...
Them's your options, Ayla. Either you... Huh?
Hold it right there, Buster.
Oh, run along, sonny.
You heard the man, twip. Scram. See?
He's the boss. He's my boss. And I don't like nobody messing with my boss.
Oh, boy.
No, sir, I don't like it at all. Now, I'd advise you to blow while you still got legs to walk on. It ain't wise to get Trag mad at you twice.
Trag? The world's strongest man? Gosh, that's who hit me.
Whoever you are, you've got to get out of here.
She's right, Richard.
Please, take me with you.
Hey, boss, Ayla's leaving too.
Step on it, lover. Trag doesn't look happy about this. In fact, I think he and DeBoss plan to follow us.
I don't care about them. I just want to find Daryl. My poor clown.
First, we find another motel. I've got to get to sleep. We can go Clarabelle hunting tomorrow, Miss... You haven't told us your name, Miss, or why you're looking for a clown.
I'm sorry. It's Ayla Prentice. I'm a high-wire artist with the carnival, and I'm trying to keep my clown from destroying himself. You see, I loved Daryl, but I betrayed him. He stopped laughing, stopped living, just wanted to die.
Stop! Pull over! There! That's his car!
Sure, okay.
There he is, and thank the Lord he's alive! Daryl! I'm here! Daryl! Daryl, what's wrong? Can't you see me? It's Ayla! Why doesn't he answer? He acts as if he doesn't know who I am.
Maybe his mind is just totally snapped.
That's so. It's my fault.
Whoa! Where do you think you're going? It's dangerous out there.
Let go of me. I have to go after him. It's my fault. He's like this.
Richard, look at this. I think it's a suicide note.
So Ayla's not exaggerating. The little guy is in a bad way.
To say the least.
Okay, then. We go. But slowly, carefully. Remember, the next log you step on could have teeth.
But as the three young people forge cautiously into the tepid waters of your home, two somewhat more sinister figures race along the swampside highway in pursuit.
Sure, I'm sure they took this road. I think.
You think? Ha! You don't know how, Trag.
Oh, boss, I try. Hey, boss, look at up the road there. It's the clown dancing in some kind of spotlight. Only, where's the light coming from? He don't even look real. Boss... I'm scared.
Slow down, you fool. You'll hit him. We don't want to kill him outright. Swerve, you idiot. Swerve.
I'm swerving. But we're going to hit that tree.
The truck's gas tank explodes on impact, and the vehicle becomes a Nova Bright Inferno. And the little clown stands watching, gleefully.
Good evening, Trag. How are you? I am fine. Where is Garvey?
Laugh. Why, you little punk. When I get out from under this...
You'll kill me. Make me die. Where's Garvey?
You blasted right, I'll kill you. I'm mad now.
Oh, my. He's mad. But he'll still have to catch me. And he can't, because he's too big and slow and stupid.
Maybe. But at least I ain't no walking joke.
And not too far away.
Listen, voices. It sounded like Trag.
I didn't hear anything. Are you sure?
No. It's hard to be sure of anything in here.
I didn't realize it would be this dark. There are so many little sounds, so many shadows. It's... Oh! That's no shadow. It's some kind of... Here. Oh, whoa. Someone. It's got Daryl.
Holy cow. It's the man thing. Take it easy, Ayla. I know this is hard to believe, but that creature won't harm us or Daryl. If that is the clown he's holding, he may be protecting him.
Even so, we better not stop him.
Right. We'll move closer. Slowly.
And so, not suspecting that the man they seek to save is already dead, they inch their way through the dense swamp growth toward the spot where you stand. The hunk of earth you have chosen for the man's final resting place. And when they push aside the last clump of green, when they see the clown's limp body and the heavy branch in your mottled hand, Ayla draws the logical but wrong conclusion and panics. Heedless of the seeming danger you present, she rushes to the side of her fallen friend.
Daryl, wake up! It's Ayla! Daryl! Oh, no! He's dead! Dead!
You can feel this woman's deep sorrow. Your own head bows. But then, another powerful emotional force makes you whirl, startled.
How could you? I'd almost come to think of you as human. But now, get out! Get out of here or I'll...
Anger aimed directly at you, emanating from a man you assume to be your friend. Why? What did you do? Why does he loathe you so? You cannot reason. And even if you could, you lack the vocal mechanism with which you might explain to them their error. So you merely skulk away. Once you have gone, tears flow copiously.
I didn't believe the man thing was capable of this. In fact, it still strikes me as odd that I could face him down so easily. Unless...
I never told him how I felt. I'm so ashamed.
Oh, wow! How could I have been so blind? Ayla, look. He's been shot. The monster didn't kill him.
But that's impossible. We didn't hear any gun go off. And we just saw Daryl alive a few minutes ago. Didn't we?
You know, I'm beginning to wonder about that.
So am I. We all saw something back there. But what?
A ghost, maybe.
Come on, Ruth. Under the circumstances, isn't that a little bit morbid?
Nice try, twerp. Play acting that clown's dead to protect them from me.
Trag!
Come on, clownsy. Stand up and get beat to death like a man, you hear?
Stop it, Trag! You can't kill a corpse. Trag, I said stop it!
You said? Why should the world's strongest man care what you said?
Perhaps you are the reason Trag should care. For despite your puzzlement at his earlier outburst, you still know Rory as a good man.
Who's the lug in the gorilla suit?
And Trag's assault upon him enrages you.
Whoever he is, he ain't on my side. So he must be on yours. So? He's a blasted living slime pool. If he figures that's gonna stop me, this is a challenge for me. I know I can take any man, but a monster, that's something new. I sliced right through him.
He has torn from you some small bits of your being, yet still you stand, to all appearances, unharmed.
I tore into you, ripped you apart, and you didn't even feel it.
You are waiting for one reaction, fear. For if this man or any man fears you, your very touch can burn his flesh to ashes. But Trag is not afraid, only amazed. He attacks again. But this time, it is your strength which prevails. And in the absence of fear, you resort to other, even more brutal means to destroy your foe. But the memories return once more, the visions of needless, wanton slaughter. And though your instincts advise you otherwise, you allow him to live. And as you make that choice, the most bizarre event of this night occurs.
Holy leaping! What is it? What's happening to him? Or is it happening to us? Are we all losing our minds?
The warm night air has suddenly turned chill. As you stare along with the humans at the skeletal specter that has risen from Daryl's lifeless shell.
What are you? What do you want?
Why, I want to make you laugh. I want smiles and guffaws and grins and good cheer. And most of all, peace. What does any clown want but to make people happy? But I could not go on making others laugh when all I felt inside was pain, when the love I gave was not returned. But now, my soul is free. I shall feel mortal pain no more. And so I can laugh forever.
You look and listen to the specter of a clown before you. And all that you know, Man-Thing, is that never has laughter made you feel so sad.